Hi, these are podcasts provided by LightPath Resources. The website is light-path-resources.org. The provider of this website, Reverend Don Chapin, is one of the main speakers, and I am also an interviewer. My name is Reverend Stu Mann. There are many other speakers on many different topics. And the intention of these podcasts is to connect with people of like minds and like hearts who want to discuss spiritual perspectives on everyday topics and also current event topics that are happening in the world.
Four. All your spiritual tools will become part of your lives, but more than that, you will find the grace that supplies all that you need. There is another issue, of course, the human idea of what you need. So maybe we could talk about the ideas of spiritual tools and grace and what we think we need.
What we think we need is often wrapped up with ego, personality and ego. What we actually wind up with, it's like in my case, this far sight capability popped up. Who knows when, where, I don't know, but it popped up and it began to be very useful.
But and far sight is being able to sort of like, there's another name for that.
The military uses it heavily.
Yeah, I can't think of what it is off the top of my head. It's not time traveling, but it's, what is the name of that?
What it really boils down to is interdimensional viewing.
Okay. Yeah, that wasn't the word, but I understand.
I know.
That's the word. Okay. But it's basically, you know, where you're able to see, I mean, just in case somebody's listening doesn't know what it means is being able to distinguish from this moment into other time sequences.
Most likely. The first, I didn't even know I was using it at the time, but I was projecting healing light to somebody. Normally, you know, the green healing light. And in my mind's eye or whatever, or knowledge, I don't know where it appears, but anyway, I could see the effect of that light as it reached the target. When it reached that target, again, an other dimensional, other time frame, even though I could even be driving the car on a freeway. I did that quite a bit to Reno. And I could see the effect and see that green light begin. A large part of that green light, minimum of 50%, starts to turn to pink. I've seen it as high as somewhere above 90% turn to pink.
So there's kind of a fine line between visualizing and having farsight, right? I mean,
yes, yes.
They are two different ideas.
Different concepts, yeah.
Yeah.
The far sight is something that I was not conscious of working with, whereas visualizing, you are. You're consciously trying to probably get whatever you're trying to visualize, you know? Try to obtain it.
Yeah, you're in the process of being a deliberate creator.
Exactly.
By visualizing.
Yes. Yeah.
Okay.
Farsight is, it can be trained. I mean, the military trains people for this. There are several companies that have branched out from the military on their own, and they hire out their abilities.
So it's like a service.
It is.
Farsighted service.
Okay. It is. It's, I don't mean service in terms of the military.
Right, just like a service.
Yeah. To me, the military is not a service. That's another topic. But anyway.
Yeah, that's a big topic.
So. But yeah, it is. You can be trained to do this, and this is what our military has done with a lot of people. If I had exhibited this capability many years ago, I might have been winding up in a unit of that nature. Okay, because they like to recruit people that have some native ability. They don't need to, because they have their own training program for this, and it's very effective.
But for us, for this, we're doing spiritual tools. So spiritual tools are like visualizing, developing your far sight, healing energy.
I started using it with healing, yes. When we started working with this Healing Earth group, I was sending energy out to work on mass consciousness in different areas of the U.S.
Uh-huh.
Okay. I also first had the group visualize what they could see of the mass consciousness. What did it look like to them in various parts of the country? I also checked with a couple that was channeling some ETs. They confirmed what I was seeing. The worst case that I'm seeing, and I still see it today, not as bad as it was, is a huge black, almost obsidian block going from roughly Boston down around Raleigh or so along the eastern coast. It's ego, greed, whatever you want to call it, that creates that blackness, and it's very stubborn. Okay, so what we did initially start sending this universal energy out with the intent of working on that particular black block and softening. Okay.
Yep.
This black block, the energy that we sent out began to find little cracks in that block. This energy worked on its own. It is self-intelligent, if you want to call it that. And it began working into these blocks through those cracks, widening. Pretty soon we had a crack from all the way through. That worked from the inner side, the western side of that block, all the way out to the Atlantic Ocean.
Hmm.
Then we began the north-south cracks working, I assume, with Congress at the time.
Right.
But I could see that working.
So the ability to feel that energy, is that farsightedness, or is that more just being, you know, energy perceptive?
I never did feel it as such. I was, hard to explain. I was seeing it, but yet not seeing it with visual eyes.
Right, okay. Like in your mind's eye you were seeing it.
It was an inner knowledge that this is what's occurring.
Uh-huh.
Okay, but the idea of seeing it, yes, that's what you would expect. Didn't happen
seeing
in my case.
Seeing it with your eyes, you mean?
Yeah.
Well, there's so much that goes on in life that you don't see with your eyes. I mean, once you get developed, right? I mean, that's like a whole other tool set, is being able to perceive life but not having to see it with your eyes. You know,
and not become too passionate of what happens in life, right?
Right.
Yeah, about what you're seeing.
Yeah, because you can't get involved with it. You can't start, like, you know, voting for it or trying to act on it, because then
you can tie your emotions in knots.
Yeah.
You know, and I last couple of days I've done that for a few hours at a time. You know, see what's going on here, there, and the emotions come in, and pretty soon you're in the dumps, but no, you're coming back out of it too.
Well, so no, that's a really good point though. So once you get sensitive to energy, and you can feel energy around you or about you, or, you know, like you're saying, in different geographical places, you also have the ability to heal yourself.
Yeah.
To however you, I don't know if that's the right phrase, but you clean yourself up. You know, get rid of the negative stuff that you picked up along your experience.
You can. Just like you'll see in this book, though. One of the easiest ways to do that is just bring that universal energy down through your body. Many people, you know, meditators say bring it up through the bottom of the feet, They basically recommend coming down through the crown chakra, but knowing that you can also use the palms of your hands for healing, just like you do in Reiki.
Right, right.
Okay. Seven chakras, our body's full of chakras. We have them everywhere. When I mentioned that business of the guard chakras coming in the same time that the eighth chakra appeared, just two more to add to the multitude that we have in our body.
Yes, yeah, so the visualization of that energy going from starting at your toes going up or your crown chakra going down is a good tool. A good tool in terms of being able to assist you in developing your sense of energy moving through your body.
It's acclimation, yeah.
Acclimation, good point, yeah.
So, yeah, and as the body becomes more acclimated to that process, the better you feel physically.
It's like a muscle, though. I mean, just like you learn to run.
It is, absolutely is a muscle, yes.
Yeah, learn to exercise or something. You have to
And keep at it, and keep at it.
Yeah.
And that was it's a good point, because that was my mistake with it when I found out that this RV wasn't coming down directly. And it was going to a show first. Okay, I hadn't exercised that psychic muscle in a long time, and I had almost forgotten about it. Okay.
So you're talking about the recreational vehicle that you wanted to buy.
I will be buying. I think, but I'm going to have to see it first.
Right.
And this is the mistake I made in saying, okay, hey, if it's going through that, I'm not too sure I want one that so many people are going through. I'm just thinking from the psychic energy standpoint. On the other hand, like you say, I had been away from trying to use energy to that extent so long that I'd forgotten, okay, that's not really a big deal. You can psychically clean that up too. I was doing this in Hong Kong back in 92 on a very primitive level.
Right, I think a lot of people do it, they just don't recognize it. I mean, even good, in a way, not fully, but even if you're just thinking positive thoughts, you're helping to tune up your energy.
That's very, very good, yes.
At a very basic level.
Yes.
I mean, there's so much more to it than that, but that's a start for sure.
Yeah. Yeah, well, the way I had started, it was very cumbersome. We knew we had some bad sexual energy throughout the place we were living in, Diane and I. There was a woman that was doing what is it? Yoga, Tantra yoga. Attempting Tantra.
Okay.
And she was mishandling the energy that it was saturating the whole house.
Wow.
Permeating the whole structure.
Tantra yoga is sexual yoga.
Yeah.
Channeling your sexual energy in a very specific method or process, yeah.
But she was not doing it very cleanly, whatever you want to call it, and that energy was just, you can feel it.
Right.
Almost smell it. It was so thick. So my approach on that, and that was way back in the beginning, before I'd even tried any of this, was to literally send my consciousness through every wall, every piece of furniture, and so on, and force any negativity out. Okay, that's a very crude way of doing things, but it worked.
Right.
And I had to keep going back. I redo it again every few days.
Well, so it starts with the intent. I mean, you were super clear that you wanted to get rid of the energy. You were absolutely no doubt about it, getting rid of the energy.
No question. No question. That's what. Intention is everything, you know.
Yeah, and then so you came to the idea of using your consciousness to push it out. I mean, so your intention brought intuition, and then you did it, and now, you know, you can recognize that experience as a primitive, because now you have a more refined way of doing it.
Primitive, but still effective.
Yes, exactly. Right.
You know. So, yeah, there are many more ways to do something of that nature now.
And anybody can do it. I mean, these tools are available to anyone, but it's just, you've got to be willing.
That is what we're trying to point out.
Yeah.
Exactly that.
Yeah.
In my second book that I've got in mind, I'll show just what a black artist can accomplish in doing the same thing. No big deal. I mean, anybody can use that energy whichever way they want. The downside is that black artist, when he passed on, had to go for a major re-education through another school.
Right. Yeah, I mean, that's a whole nother world. Because what we're
yes, it is. Another dimension.
That's a dark space.
Freudian slip.
Yeah. But we just really want to have people focus on the good, and which means just taking care of yourself, because you can't create something in someone else's world. I mean, even if you're good. Even if you're trying to do something good, you know, like, you know, if I want something good to happen to one of my friends, I can't be, you know, sending them the energy of them doing something good. That's not my place.
No, exactly. Exactly.
Yeah. Everybody has to handle their own stuff.
The closest you can come to do is sending them positive energy.
Right. Then they can do whatever they want with it.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. If they work it to the betterment of themselves or mankind, like they also say, good on you, mate. But if they're working it from a negative standpoint, there's always retribution from a spiritual standpoint.
Yeah, exactly. Because there is, you know, whatever you're going to give, you're going to get back. So, I mean, if you're sending out positive energy,
yeah,
then, you know, you're going to get it back in one way or another.
Maybe this lifetime, maybe not.
Right. Yeah, but you're not doing it to get anything, right? You're just sending it just to send it.
If you're doing it to get something, that's not a pure intent.
Right.
Okay. That's.
It kind of mucks it up a little bit.
A better word for it, yeah.
Because it's not about freely. It's about, well, I really expect something back. And you got an expectation in there. And so,
yeah,
you know, it gets emotional. It gets mucked up.
And then get to the point of, why doesn't God help me?
Exactly. Why don't I get what I want?
Okay. When you start visualizing something that you want, you visualize a concept. This is what I did with Sam. You know, when he needed a new car.
Right.
So I told him, don't limit yourself. Just say you need a vehicle for your highest good, for your best use, and so on. Otherwise, you wind up with a 2.5-ton truck, you know.
Exactly.
So, okay, he did the same thing. He winds up with a car of his dreams.
Nice.
You know, that, and that's just a one example of how this process works.
But I think the other part is too, when you get into working with your intentions, it can be a little embarrassing because, you know, if you're intending something and it doesn't come through, it's like, oh, well, I guess it doesn't really work is one way to approach it. But really, in reality, what happens is you're just not focused enough.
You got to watch how they say that, though. The focus cannot be on detailing what you want, what
right.
you want to accomplish. That in itself limits the universe from providing. If you look at it from the standpoint of provide me with what I need for highest good, anyone's highest good, okay, you may suffer some kind of a loss, but in the long run, you're winding up with what you really could use to better advantage than if you tried to detail, oh, I want a Eldorado, deep red, you know, like
yeah,
my beast out there. You're limiting the universe to what can provide you with the best service.
Yeah, so you could actually end up with something more than you really wanted. Because you're in this bigger space of allowing. You haven't put a limitation on it.
I think this example with Sam is the same way. He didn't anywhere near expect getting the car he got.
It like way overwhelmed him.
That jalopy he was driving was about ready to fall apart, you know, and he knew he needed something, but I kept trying to caution him. Don't specify.
Don't limit yourself.
And so he gets far more than he ever expected.
Well, and I've had that experience too. I mean, and you've had it. I mean, when you talk to people that are frequently using their intention to benefit themselves,
yeah,
you know, they'll have stories. They will. But when I started, I thought it was a bunch of, you know, hogwash. No way. I mean, it took me years to get to the point where I, you know, was willing to really sincerely, authentically give it a whirl. And then things started changing.
Absolutely.
But I could never tell myself that in the beginning. You know, yeah. I guess you just have to reach this point in life where you're like, yeah, you know, everything else hasn't worked, so maybe I should try this in a different way.
Yeah, going from a textbook metaphysician to an active seeker. A passive seeker to an active seeker.
Oh, yeah, yeah, good point. Practicing it.
Yeah.
Practicing it instead of just reading it.
Yeah.
Because when you're reading it in the beginning, oh, it sounds fantastic. Good ideas.
I think. Wish I could do that, you know.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. I think for me, the turning point was getting in touch with my feelings.
Exactly.
That was what it was. It took.
Yeah. As you get in touch with your feelings, you're actually opening up your intuition more as well.
Yeah, yeah. That was the thing, and I just didn't realize how out of touch I was.
Oh.
Or how much more there was.
Nobody does, as a rule.
Yeah, I mean, it's really amazing.
That's what I'm hoping for with this new generation, or these new generations coming through. I'm beginning to see a greater level of awareness on an individual basis. That I think they're going to be able to bypass, at least my generation, like we're standing still, the capabilities, understanding of the universe, what have you.
Yeah, they just have a, I mean, I don't know a lot of, are you talking about millennials or the ones younger than millennials? I think
younger.
Yes,
but it started with the millennials, yeah.
It started with them, okay.
Actually, the incarnation of that group, that particular group, started in the 80s.
Okay, that's what I was thinking.
Early 80s. Some preceded, I've got some references, you know, back around the turn of the century, late 1800s, which is when a lot of your New Thought churches started in the late 1800s.
Okay.
Self-proclaimed, self-ordained, okay, and started out their church because of their belief systems.
Getting away from traditional Christianity and Muslim.
But not as far away as they thought.
Yeah, not as far away. Yeah.
You find a tremendous, even in the New Age churches, you find a tremendous amount of the old catechism BS in there.
But you know, that brings up another point, because another spiritual tool is your faith and your courage. And I think a lot of people go to church, at least, you know, in my early days when I was going to church, I was going there once for, you know, like communion, but more like courage and faith, like inspiration kind of thing. Because I wasn't getting a lot of that for myself. So that's what I used it for. But then when I realized it, you know, that was, I had to go there to get it. It was just, you know, not working. I had to start doing it from within.
Exactly.
You know, I had to build up my own faith and courage. That's what my meditation teacher taught me.
And the meditation teacher was not part of that church, I would bet.
Right.
Because churches in themselves do not teach self-reliance. They
exactly.
do not. You know, it's basically money and power.
Yep.
With the church. And most of them, some of them don't even realize it. But it basically comes back to the human limitations.
It's so true. Self-reliance is a good phrase. I mean, that is the, I think, the foundation of a spiritual seeker. When you move out of the textbook and into practicing spiritual stuff, you must be self-reliant.
Take a look at the early Gnostic religion, if you want to call it a religion, belief system. They were Christians. Some of them still around. And they did not believe in the idea of a pope, for example, or a leader of a church. They believed in individual development, individual working with meditation primarily. there are Gnostic beliefs that to me are pretty far out of sight, you know, not too logical. But that particular tenet that I've read about of that early Gnostic church is the way to go. The Pope and the church out of Rome could not tolerate that. So they wiped out the Gnostics.
Right, because it's out of their control.
Well,
they were outside of the church's control.
Way outside. And they're teaching a form of Christianity that the official church couldn't tolerate. They lost power through that concept.
Which is, you know, self-reliance is a beautiful phrase. That's a really good one. I mean, anybody that's serious about being a spiritual, calling themselves spiritual, has to be self-reliant. But that, for me, when you were saying that about the older churches, it reminds me that, you know, for me, the difference between religion and spiritual is religion is defined as seeking somebody outside of yourself. And spiritual is seeking within.
Yeah.
That's what the difference for me is.
I think that's a pretty close definition for about anybody that would look at it objectively.
Right, objectively, yeah.
You know, but you don't find too many people that are willing to separate themselves from a religious, church religious concept.
Well, you got to just be at that point, I think, like I was, where it's just like, I'm ready to try something new. It wasn't fulfilling. But, you know, you just got to get to that point in your sight and recognize you're not fulfilled anymore.
Yep.
I mean, we're so oriented to finding comfort in everything.
Outside of ourselves.
Exactly.
And that's what TV ads and so on rely upon.
Yeah.
Okay, advertising, marketing, it's all, oh, have this and you'll have happiness.
Yep. Yeah, go here and you'll find happiness. go buy that, yeah. Yeah, that's huge. Self-reliance. All right, so let's see, this one's getting kind of long, but we covered, so a bunch of spiritual tools. There's energy and visualization and foresight and faith and courage, self-reliance. So they all integrate with each other. So there's
yes,
a lot of spiritual.
Yes, it all works together. You know, and it's very difficult to understand that, to even see it in any form, how all of these concepts are really the same and they work together. People have, like we've been doing, words for each characteristic that we've been talking about, but in the end, it still works together, and it comes back to what, I hate to be called a Jesus freak, but that's what Jesus was teaching.
It was
faith.
Yes, his pure teaching.
Yeah.
Yes.
When you get away from the embellishments that the church has put in it, and the church is personalizing Jesus rather than the teachings that he was trying to advocate.
Right.
So, and this was Paul's drawback. He became so enthralled with Jesus as a personality that's the way the church evolved. And so it became a church of Jesus rather than a church of God and faith and inner development.
Right. That's huge. Man, if people can hear that and get the distinction of that from this podcast, I mean, that'll set your tone a little different.
Okay.